Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, been saying.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast, and it is Duck Hunt History and Heritage Day. Mr. Bradley Ramsey, as he joins me in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi. Bradley, how are you today?
And Rocky, I'm doing great. I'm home for a change. You know how long that's been. I guess it's been about 3.5-4 weeks since I've been home. So I got my hounds at my feet. My wife's still asleep today because I took out to take care of them. So I'm doing pretty good today.
Well, I know that coming up in just a minute, you actually are having Justin Martin's going to be joining you for Duck Hunting History and Heritage. That's a lot to spit out for me, especially in the morning night and have a one cup of coffee. But I know that you and Justin did some teal hunting this past weekend.
We did. I finally got one in. I was actually supposed to hunt with them Friday. Every plane that I got on got shut down, stormed out, closed down. I spent a night in the Houston airport, so I missed my hunt Friday. Martin was kind enough to pull a rabbit out of his hat, a friend of ours, and moved that hunt till Saturday, or I think it was Saturday, moved it to. And so I got to get a hunt in, and it was a good hunt. It really was. We were all pleasantly surprised.
Well, that's a lot of good pictures taken after the hunt. I know that y'all did really well as far as from the pictures that I saw of the blue-winged teal. Hey, I want to ask you this before we jump into that interview with Justin. Yes, you know, yesterday, I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to yesterday's podcast, but we talked about the why. Josh and I talked about the why of why we hunt, why we do what we do every day. And man, I don't think there's anybody in this world to tell their why than you. There's so much history inside of your why.
You know, I've been thinking about that since you told me you were going to ask me that. And there's so many layers to it, Rocky. I mean, yeah, I love killing ducks, absolutely. But if I never killed another one in my life, I've killed more than most people will ever see. And I'm not bragging, that's just the facts. That's just the life I grew up with. That's the duck hunter I grew up with. But there's two main whys for me. Duck hunting's been the biggest part of my life for most of my life. Duck hunting, you know, it may sound overly dramatic. People don't know a lot about my story. But duck hunting has been what's kept me grounded and pretty much saved my life. And it did that because of the men that brought me into it, that taught me how to be a man and what it meant to be a person that's good in this world. And unfortunately, all of those men are gone now. And duck hunting is the place in my life where I still connect with them. So it's more than a sport. It's more than a tradition to me. It's where I connect with what makes me who I am. And that's on a spiritual level. That's on a personal level. I feel the most of who I am and the most grateful for what I've been given when I'm duck hunting, if that makes any sense. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's, It's a big thing for me.
Yeah, I said it yesterday in the podcast with Josh that there's been a lot of mornings 5 minutes before shooting time that hunters had to say, hey, man, watch these birds coming in. Look at all these ducks coming in. Those ducks didn't impress me. I've seen that a million times. What impressed me was God's artwork coming up on the eastern sky. I see God. I know I'm going to say it again. I'll say what I said yesterday. I see God when I'm in the outdoors. It reminds me there's something bigger than me, than anything in this world. To watch the sunrise, to watch the birds work, just to watch. My dad used to talk about this when I was a kid. My dad was an early riser. Now, my brother got that great gift from my dad. I'm kind of like my mom. I can lay in the bed till 6:30 or 7 o'clock. You know that in
early for most people's rock.
I know that, and that's what I was going to say. In most people's world, that's early. But when I say early, I'm talking 4:30. My dad was up at 4:30 every day, and he'd be like, "What are you doing? Why?" I mean, if he was busy, he would get to work by 5 or 5:30, take care of what he needed to take care of, lay out what he had to do for the day. But most of the time, his simple answer was he liked to see everything come to life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, every sunrise is a promise fulfilled. You know, that's something that I try to remember, is that, you know, our days on this rock are short. We don't have a lot of them. Every time that sun comes up, you got that's the promise the Lord gave you fulfilled, and what you do with the rest of it, it's all on you. He's done his part. You're there to witness that day come around. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, the spirituality of it. I mean, people, you know, use it as an excuse. Oh, well, I say some people do. I can't judge other people. Oh, well, the outdoors is my church, you know, whatever. For me, it truly is. It is the place I must feel most connected to the divine, to my creator. And that's why I mentioned the men and the people that are gone in that. It's because I know I'll have my time with them and my great reward. When all said and done, when the end of the day comes around, when my life is done, I'll spend time with them again. But until that time, those moments are what I have with them today while I'm still here. And I can't tell you how many times during a hunt I talk to my father, to Howard, to my grandfather out loud. I see something, I witness something, I do something stupid. I talk to them. And, you know, my dogs and my friends may look at me funny, but I'm with those people when I'm there because they're the reason that I am there.
Exactly right. Yeah, I guess the one that I left off yesterday, I was thinking about it last night. I kind of listen. I rarely listen to these podcasts. I edit them. I hear parts of them while I'm editing them. But last night I kind of listened, went back and re-listened to the podcast from yesterday. And I think the one thing that I left out was something that Pat and Bill and we've all touched on in these podcasts of why. And I think that one major why that I left off was, when you fool an animal into doing something that he normally does, but he's coming into, you defeat nature for a few moments on hunts. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can see that. You know, there's been a fair amount of talk on podcasts lately about different ways that people consider birds finishing. And, you know, that some people say that's landing, some people that's getting them into the decoys. And I can see that part of it, you know, because you're out there, you're mimicking nature, you're trying to be one with it, but you know, also establish your place in the food chain, I suppose you'd say. So it is coming full circle. When you get the birds to do what you want them to do, you know, it's complete. And there was a time in my life, Rocky, honestly, where I thought, you know, maybe I don't need to shoot anymore. Maybe I just need to film. Yeah, I've killed a lot of ducks. I just want to shoot my camera. But it's hard to miss with a camera. And you know, there's something about shot, the bird falling, when you've done your job, that completes the act. You know, there's a moment in there where everything comes together. And for a waterfowler, it is when you make a clean kill, the bird falls. You know, there was a quote from where I can't remember that's between the shot and the echo. And that is the moment we live in. Between the sound of the report of the gun and the echo in the distance, what happens in that brief time period is where we as waterfowlers live.
I think it's more so in turkey hunting than it is in duck hunting. Listen, one of my favorite sayings, and a lot of people that's hunted with me over the years will tell you one of my favorite sayings is, ducks are going to do what ducks are going to do. That's who they are. That's who they are in nature. They pretty much do the same unless you freak them out every day. You do something to freak them out. But turkeys, you know, a twig to break the wrong way or a leaf shuffled the wrong way, and it messed a turkey up for the day.
Yeah.
I've always said, standing over a dead turkey, man, that you got a turkey to do something that he was not supposed to do, and that was come to a hen. Because hens are supposed to come to him. But, you know, in the duck hunting, waterfowling, duck hunting world, ducks are going to do what ducks do, especially in Mississippi. And I know it's different in parts of the flyway, especially over in Arkansas. When you're from Arkansas, Missouri, you're working traffic, you're breaking ducks off. You're getting them to do what they're not supposed to. So it's almost similar to what we're talking about in turkey hunting.
You know, I see that in duck hunting too, though. I mean, there's those days when you've got the bird that wants to land, you know, 60 yards out, and you get on them and you make them pick up and carry all the way back over to you, and you make that happen. That you force nature to bend to your will.
That is true, because I don't know how many times I've seen it, a duck 20, 30 foot off the deck, you hit that call one last time, pleading with him to come back. It hits him, that call hits him. And it shakes, and he reverses back to you.
That's that forcing nature to your will thing. And I, you know, we don't always do it. I mean, it's much easier to be successful if you just go where the ducks want to be. But sometimes it's a nice challenge when you're not on the X, when you're on somewhere between, as Randy said, F and U, and trying to make them do what you want them to do.
Bradley, I've enjoyed it, man. I appreciate the time. I look forward to listening to what you and Justin have to say about that blue wing teal hunt that y'all went on this weekend. And y'all actually go into a little bit more detail about what to expect over the next few days, right?
Absolutely. With this front coming through, we talk about what we hope to see and what we think we're going to see. Those don't always line up.
That's true, especially with blue wing teal. Those suckers are here today, gone tomorrow.
No, very quick. Very quick.
Well, man, I hope you enjoy your next few days off. I hope you get some rest.
I appreciate it, Rock. We'll hopefully I'll see you Wednesday.
All right, bud. We will see you then. We will get to that interview with Justin now.
All right, guys. Like I mentioned earlier, I've got Justin Martin on the line with me. Justin, how are you today, sir?
Well, I'm good, Bradley, other than the fact I ain't hunted in a couple of days, but I'm rallying.
You're rallying. Well, I, you and I got a chance to finally hunt together during teal season a couple of days ago. You'd just gotten back from being out west chasing four-footed critters too, though, hadn't you?
Yeah, for the last 5 or 6 years, my first assignment, as I like to call it, of the year is go chase them old wood goat things up there in Wyoming, and I'll be fair, they whoop me, and you know what, I've had enough of them, and I told them as I was leaving, I yelled at that field full of deer that them blue-winged teal, that their blood was on those deer's hands, because I was going to take it rough on them if I could. So
I guess I'm not spoiling anything by saying you don't have anything, a big video coming out of it.
No, the only video you're going to see coming out of me is a couple of swings and misses. I missed two, you know. I missed one at 30, which was new for me. I'd never missed anything on camera, period.
Okay.
And so I missed him, and, you know, for I don't know why. I just, things happen, hunting, I guess. And the second one I missed, he was at 50 and not getting an inch closer. And the tree was, wind blowing 20 miles an hour, and I'm not trying to make excuses at all because I just smooth missed. But, you know, the thing was rocking back and forth, and I was up there, and I was like, I was timing the rocks, you know, trying to figure out, you know, when I was at the peak where I'd have that moment of steel where I could release the trigger. And I thought I had it all timed out, and I let it go, and I was like, oh, that's it. And it just never started dropping. You know, I guess that darn Hoyt shoots so fast, I don't really know. When I let it go, I thought I smoked him, and it, too, went right over his back. And I told my cameraman, I said, I'm done.
So, you shot over on both of them?
Over on both of them. I was consistent. And it wasn't my bow. I shot it every day at camp. So, you know, I looked at him, too, after that. Look, I took my release off. I was so mad when that deer did, when that arrow went over that deer. I took my release off, and there's a little 8-point right there up under us, kind of. And I just hit him right in the top of the head with my release. That's how mad I was. I just took it, slung it, and just hit him right on top of the head with it. And, you know, then that really sent all the deer in an uproar there. So,
You know, when I found out you were coming back in time for opening day, I figured something had to be up, because originally you told me you were going to miss the teal opener. But you did get to hunt teal opener, didn't you?
I did. I had to go up to Benelli the day before, and that's about the time Hurricane Florence was making landfall. And
okay.
You know, I decided I went up, shot up in a sporting clays deal that benefited veterans, a big veteran foundation up around the D.C. area, and shot in that, and then turned around and come right back home. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, that little sporting clays shoot was quite the tune-up for teal season. Knocked a lot of the rust off, and I just want to say this, you know, for our people that are in here from North and South Carolina, having flown over that storm kind of where you could see it, man, our thoughts and prayers are with y'all as y'all continue to rebuild and battle back. Being from Louisiana my whole life, we've dealt with a lot of them things, and I know what it takes to get back on your feet after something like that. And yeah, for sure, our thoughts and prayers are with them, and hopefully their communities are going
to
pull together, you know, and all that good stuff. So,
yeah, I was seeing videos today, even of just crazy stuff that you don't think about dealing with after a storm. You know, they were out with the fire departments just washing the thousands of fish off the roads. Now that the water's coming down in certain areas, I mean,
just crazy.
The scale and scope of it, you just can't even fathom until you live through a storm like that.
No, and one of our really good buddies who we were partners with back in the early days at Duck Commander when I first started here, Matthew Cagle, for those in this group, you may or may not know him. He is the founder and owner of Rig'em Right, who first really made the prepackaged Texas rig decoy weight, desirable. The water got up in their building, and he had nothing but, I think it was pretty well catastrophic loss to his business. So, as a waterfowl community, you know, if we can, you know, we help them boys get back on their feet, you know, that would be something that's awesome. Matthew's a good guy. He's a good God-fearing man. And we're no longer partnered with him, so I'm not saying that because it's a partner at all, but I am still his friend, very much so. And he's a great dude, makes a great product and a great company. So if you're looking to spend money in any of that way this year, think about Rig'em Right and helping them boys that's one of us get back on their feet. So,
Absolutely. Well, how did your teal opener go?
Oh, it was pretty solid, man. It was... you know, we hunted a big deadwood reservoir, and right at daylight, right at legal, it wasn't a whole lot going on, so I was about halfway depressed, and then an old single come in, and I raised up, and I just had to have him. And the first shot of the year, I took his head smooth off of him. And I said, oh, it's going to be a good year here, you know. And we got to shooting around, and we finally, I think we scratched out 20 on opening day. I think we were four shy of the limit. And, you know, it was that was really good shooting for us. I mean, we killed a lot of what come in. You know, we may have had four ducks get out of there, but it wasn't many. And
right.
So I thought it was, all things considered, a pretty fun shoot. You know, and then the next day your hopes are high and everybody's, you know, excited, and then we killed three. So,
ow.
You know,
that's a big fall off.
Yeah, you know, one thing I do is keep a journal of all my hunts and everything. And, you know, this year is especially funny because you look at it and, you know, we'll start on opening day. And it goes, here's how the teal season is gone. 23, 14, 2, took a couple of days off for work, 9, and 16. So consistency has not been a model.
No, it has not.
You know, it's weird. Of course, you know, North Louisiana is very rarely consistent teal killing. We're pretty much, you know, I think I look at North Louisiana kind of like a pilot truck stop. They just stop in here long enough to get gas, something to eat, stretch their legs, and then they're gone again. So, you know, it's never been overly consistent, but generally it's a little better than that. And, you know, but compared to last year we shot like 50 total for the season. So,
oh, last
you know, this year,
year
we're all... Yeah, we're already over that. We're, you know, my little group that we all hunt together, you know, we're at 64 for the year. And, you know, it's hard for me to sing the blues about 64. I've been pretty happy with it, you know. I'll say probably the most fun I've had was the one that me, you, and my wife went on this past weekend. It was just, you know, it was a lot of fun. Man, it was fun hearing the excitement in her voice. She's just like a kid, man. She gets fired up. But of course, I do too. So, you know, but
you're pretty fired up for first thing that morning when the big groups were still milling about.
You hadn't really
seen that yet.
No, I hadn't seen that all year. I hadn't seen a bunch of 50 yet, and they just come bombing over our heads. I was like, okay, we may be getting into something here, you know, and sure enough, we did get into a little bit of something. You know, me, you, and her whacked out 16 of them and had a good shoot and left at 7:30. I feel pretty confident we could have stayed and killed two more, but there's no reason to burn your hole up. There ain't no reason to sit there till 9 o'clock for two ducks. You know, that's just the way we operate. Once we get our fill and we've had fun, we'll check it to them. So,
yeah, I think that was the right call. I mean, I think I don't think we shot another bird between 7:15 and 7:30. And like I said, two more, we were two away, really wasn't worth it. I think I would have quit at 7:30 with the last group we had come in, we killed five out of. So, I mean, I'd have been happy to leave at 11 or 12 birds at 7:30 with what has been happening. We just have to cut into that last bunch pretty good.
Oh yeah, and we had that one. He thought he was gonna be slick and come back by there. That was a bad call for him. Don't you mess with me with them number sixes, son. You better get further than that. That's all I gotta tell you.
How he didn't know. I mean, you're not like you're a small thing when you stand up in Riceville, Martin. I mean,
no,
you know,
I was out there chasing that cripple, and I guess he thought I was out of bullets. That's a bad deal for him, you know. But whatever, he should have kept counting. It is fun. Gosh dang it. Them, you know, because they were working us so tight. They were working like right on top of us. So every time they come over, you could hear that wind off them wings, man. The thought of it right now makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. And, you know.
You already told me you're going tomorrow. So, I mean, you know, it's also hurting your feelings there a little bit.
Yeah, you know, and I'm sitting here now and I'm just listening to it. It's pouring down rain outside. And it's back to doing that. So hopefully the teal fields are getting a little bit of shot of fresh water, get rid of some of that stagnant smell out of them. And, You know, I think we're in for, if you look at it weather-wise, it looks like we may be in for a pretty strong close in the teal season. I'm a little worried that Central Arkansas got all that rain and may have put water in them to hold just north of us that may, you know, may keep them from getting here before it closes. I'm not sure, but, you know, all things considered, it's been I've had a really good time. I'll say this, you won't ever hear me say this often, but I really wish blue wing teal would go back to a 4-bird limit. I really do. There's just something about, I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoy the chance to shoot 6 of them, but man, it was a lot easier killing 4 of them, man.
Yeah, it is. It is, and you feel, yeah. I mean, you walk out of there with 4 field and you got your limit, that you feel just as good as you do when you got 6. But, you know, with 2 or 3 people, the 6-bird limit's not tough. But you put 4 guns in the field and you try to shoot that many teal before they stop flying around in the morning, it can be rough. It can be rough.
Oh, it can be. Yeah, it can be. And let's call a spade here. As far as table fare goes in the world of waterfowl, the blue wing teal is pretty low on my list. He takes a lot of TLC to get to a really strong palatability level. So they are what they are. I don't know. I just they're just the biggest thing that I love the most about them is they work really tight to you, and it just gives you that overall rush of. Just, man, when you got a bunch of 10 or 15 or 20 just right on top of you, and, you know, you take your time to get them in there and get them broke down over the decoys, you can pretty well do some pretty good damage on them. So that's what's kind of the most fun about them is the rainouts that can take place because, you know, they get in there tight, man. It's a lot of fun. So,
That being said, it
is nice to have fresh birds on the table. You know, it is nice to do that. But he's no green wing.
No. My wife asked me if I brought birds back, and I'm like, oh yeah. She brought my limit back. She's like, oh good, we can have teal. I said, nah, I think we're gonna wait on that. I'm gonna clean them, but this ain't the bird you're thinking about. You won't be cooking medium rare with just a little bit of wine reduction and just serving him right off the bone. I mean, we're waiting on a gumbo for these.
Yeah.
And then sneak them in there with a whole lot of something else.
Yeah, I guess they call them teal because they're just a small duck because they really ain't like them green wings. Them green wings are one of their own, you know. But, you know, I think the most encouraging thing I've seen during teal season is in North Louisiana, we've got a pretty strong crop of wood ducks that have raised off this year. So,
do we ever.
How about that? Boy, that was a woody fest there for a little while. I'd get a man in trouble if you ain't spot on your duck ID. Man.
I hadn't seen wood duck numbers in a field like that in a long time. And
man,
you know,
it's a pile.
I usually see a few of them in the rice fields, but good grief, coming out of the timber to these rice fields that morning. I mean, and all morning long in droves.
They never stop. They never stop. Uh-uh. I don't know what it is, but, you know, and the cool thing, too, for us nerds, you know, we've actually got some fulvous whistlers here, too. So that was kind of cool to see them come in and work the decoys. And
That's the first 4 I've ever seen in the wild in my life. That was really cool. And you had just mentioned that there were 4 up around there, and here they come, they show up.
Yeah, and I've seen them, and there's a bunch of about 15 that's got about 6 adults, and the rest, I guess, are their brood that have been hanging around, too. So we've really gotten to know each other. We see each other basically every morning. And, you know, between them and the black bellies, they at least give you something to kind of fool around with. I do wish they'd let you buy a tag for each of them. That way I could add them to my collection because they're generally gone by the time regular duck season opens. But, you know, it is what it is. I know why we
occasionally
can't shoot them. They got little ones, so.
Yeah, we occasionally get a few whistlers that are still around on the early opener, but it's pretty rare. It's pretty darn rare. I tried to target one when I was living over there on 15 and swore to myself that, opening day, I knew some of them were still around. I was going to shoot those. And, of course, you know, when the gadwall and everything else started flying, I forgot about them until I was done. and, you know, watch them flying decoys while I was walking out. Like, well, yeah.
It's funny how that opening day, them green wings. Yeah, it's funny that opening day, them green wings get my full attention. I'm like, yep, that's
oh,
what
yeah.
I want.
Give I've me been waiting all more. Year.
Give me six of them little sweet tasting rascals and let me roll, you know.
Well, have you heard anything
I'm
on two reports
forward.
From your other folks across the flyway? I know.
Yeah, I know North Missouri, and I talk to Tony with Habitat Flats pretty often. We kind of trade texts back and forth, just kind of on kind of migration reports, what everybody's seeing, and they had them pretty good up there, which is, you know, good and bad. I mean, he said they were moving out because their highs have only been in like the 60s the past few days, so that's a good thing because
right.
they're closed. So he's taking some of the water, I know, off his moist soil and starting to move it to woods and other food, so that's good. I mean, I like the fact that he don't try to hold them up there.
Yeah.
But rest assured, he's no idiot either. He's trying to not ruin all his good duck food. He don't want it to rot.
It ain't about helping us. I understand.
No, he's pretty slick when it comes to all that. So, so that's a good thing. And he'll, you know, start getting his water table up in other places on his farm. So that's awesome. I know my boys in Kentucky have been killing the snot out of them this year. They're right there in a bend of the Mississippi River. So they've been killing them pretty good. Arkansas, I haven't heard just a whole lot out of.
Right.
Yeah, but I only know a few people that actually actively chase them in central and north Arkansas. So, and then I hear the same thing though out of South Louisiana. There's teal in spots, but they're not everywhere. So it's, you know, which generally South Louisiana is pretty good. So. Pretty
yeah, that thing I'd be it's kind of been spotty. I mean, the spots that were on were on really strong, and the ones that were on, it was kind of like what you've been seeing, the kind of here today, gone tomorrow kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's just the nature of early migrating blue-winged teal for the most part. You know, that's who they are. They are who they are. So, and I appreciate them, and I love them, and
I think with, you know, this cool snap we're getting, and we're not getting the cold front they'd originally predicted for us, it's still going to be a whole lot. I mean, look, 87 is better than 97 by a long shot, by much more than 10
what
degrees.
What are you talking about? Them first 4 days of season was about the hottest I ever remember hunting down here. Good grief. Man, it was hot. Ooh, it was hot.
So,
I'll take
it.
Yeah,
we should see. Well, I think it'll help a little bit. I think we're going to see a little bit more movement. I mean, of course, these birds will move a little bit longer in the morning when it's a little bit cooler. Got a decent moon right now. Everything's lined up for them to be moving through and being a little more active. Duck just isn't going to be active when it's 100-something degrees outside.
No, heck no. I mean, and some of them I'm killing, you go over there and pick them up, and they don't even weigh a pound. Like, there ain't nothing on them. They ain't got no fat on them. They ain't hardly got no meat on them. I do like what we've killed this year, being the nerd that I am. I've seen a good mix of adult birds and juvenile birds, so it seemed like their hatch was pretty good.
Right.
So that's always the positive sign, you know.
Well,
we had one the other morning that was about plumed out. Remember him? He had his little colors on already.
that's the first Drake blue wing I think I can ever remember in teal season that had his moon patch really starting to show up well. And he wasn't a pretty bird. He wasn't anything to put on the wall, but for a September bird, he was well on his way.
Oh, yeah, he was getting a head start on the rest of them boys. I remember seeing him in there, and when I saw him turn to leave, I said, I got to have that white-nosed rascal. Come here, son. And, you know, it's funny how your eyes go to that.
Yeah, that's one thing about blue wings that, you know, that I always loved is, you know, like I said, they do work in tight. But the wing patches on that outside bank when they're back to you and making that swing, it's one of the prettiest moments in duck hunting that there is.
Man. It goes from a little
when
water brown.
When they cut like that and all that blue shows up, it's just absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, we don't see them in good numbers the rest of the season. I mean, we may kill a few blue wings here or there and yonder during regular season, but this is our time to see them. This is really the only chance we get unless you go out and watch for them in the springtime when they're coming back through. and we really don't even see the. Yeah.
You don't want to do that too much. Yeah, and you don't want to do that too much. That'll breed an outlaw. So you gotta watch going out there and doing that stuff. I've had a man just like looking at him saying, boy, nobody'd ever know one shot, you know.
that's what Rob jokingly calls taxidermy season, special taxidermy permit.
Yeah. Oh, I wish they'd let us buy a tag, like one drake of each species where we could just go out there and pick us a trophy for the wall in about March. That'd be awesome.
But then charge me more, I'll do it.
Charge me $25 a bird or something. I'll do it in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah. So you gonna try to slip off most of the rest of the week?
I'm gonna try to hunt from here to the end now. You know, I'm not gonna hunt in these thunderstorms that keep popping up, but if it's just a little rain, I got a slicker suit for that. So
we'll give it a whirl
and see what happens.
Well, Martin, I certainly appreciate it, man. I hope I can see you out there again before it's all said and done, before I have to go back to my real job. But I'm sure you will keep me up to speed, if not.
Oh, I sure will. Let me go in. I want to do one thing while we got everybody here. Y'all take a minute when you listen to this and commend Mr. Ramsey on the effort to quit smoking. For the first time in 10 years of knowing Bradley, I did not smell a Marlboro cigarette or some other variety while we were hunting. And while I'll admit I missed it, I missed the smell coming out of there. My hat's off to you for attempting to do that. I just wanted you to know that. So.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I know the nostalgia smell, but I think I'd rather be around longer than have be remembered in the moment.
I guarantee you. Hey, I applaud you. As a man who dips tobacco, I applaud you. So
it ain't easy, but it's the right thing. I appreciate it, Mark. I appreciate it. And I hope I see you in the field later this week.
Hey, let's do it.
All right, man. And I want to thank all of you for listening to this edition to the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
Ladies and gentlemen.